We begin the current daf Masechet Ksubos daf Memches. We begin 11 lines down from the top of the Amud, where the Gemara continues explaining the previous Mishnah, which we spoke about the different rights that a father has in his daughter, and then the rights that a husband has in his wife, and moreover the obligations that a husband has to his wife. Now on that, the Mishnah quoted to Behuda Omer, he says, "Afil ani shebi Yisrael v'chulu." Now, the Tanakam had mentioned that one of the obligations that the husband has to his wife is kuvarasa, is her burial. So Yehuda says that even the poor man in the Jewish people cannot do less than two halalim, two flutes, and a koinanis, a woman that wails, a type of a way of being maspid his wife. Now, that the Gemara asks, Machlal, the inference could be that this is Rabbi Yehuda saying this. The Tanakama Sabar Hani Loi, that the Tanakama holds, that one does not have to go ahead and spend that expense for the levaya, for the funeral. And you don't have to have two halalim necessarily if you're a poor man. So that the Gemara asks, Hey Chedami, what is the case that we're discussing? As the Gemara explains, Idi Orcha, if this was a normative practice of his wife's family, that the women, when they were nifter, that they would have two flutes and a makinenis, so my time at the Tanakama, the Amaloi, so what would be the understanding why the Tanakama would hold that that's not the obligation of the husband to the wife? If his obligation is to bury her, that's the minig of her family, that's what they would do. And therefore, that's his obligations towards her. If he has to do what her kavur necessitates, that's what the women of the family do. And the delav orchan, if that's not normative for her family, they don't necessarily spend on two halalim and a mekanenis. So my time to Behuda, what's the reason to Behuda that he holds that even the poorest man in Jewish people would have to spend on that? So I think Gemara explains late sricha. The case that they're arguing about is kagain de orche di day. Actually, the women of his family, when they pass away, then they're mourned with two flutes and a makanenis. But v'lav orchadida, actually it's not the practice of her family, of his wife. So the machlokes is that Tanakamas of a Tanakama holds. Ki amrina, when do we say this halachic concept, which is discussed later on in Perek Afal Pi, that oyla imoi ve'enu yiredis imoi, that she gets elevated to the status of her husband and does not get demoted to his level, which is learned out from a pasuk from V'hi B'ulas Boal, which literally translates as that she's a woman that already had bia with a man, but it's learned out from the term of B'ula of the word Aliyah, that she gets elevated to the status of her husband but doesn't get demoted to his level. So the Tanakhama holds that when do we say that she goes up to his standards? Hanamili Mechayim, that's only in life. Meaning, for example, let's say when they're both living and he tells her, I want you to nurse our child. And she says, no, I want a wet nurse. I don't want to have to nurse. Now, actually, the practice of her family members was to nurse. But his family, they were, in that sense, better to do in the sense that they didn't nurse and they had someone else nursing. So actually, the halacha is that he has to pay for her wet nurse. She doesn't have to nurse. She gets elevated to his status. Now, Tanakama held it's only from in when they're living. But after death, then there is no such concept that she gets elevated to his status. And therefore, the Tanakama holds that he doesn't require two halalim and makinenis, like her family, because that is how their burial is. The women of that family didn't require that, and therefore, although his family is, he doesn't have to do that for her. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda Saber, he held that no, afilachar misa, she gets elevated to his status even after her death. And since his family does have the two flutes and the mekanenis, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda said that even a poor person has to do that for his wife, even though that's not even her family, but rather his family's custom. Now, Amar Avchizda Amar Marukva, halach Rabbi Yehuda, halach avaz Rabbi Yehuda, that even after death, he has to elevate her to his family status. Now, another statement from the same Amayra, he says, Misha nishtata, if a man becomes mentally deranged. So Bezdin Yerd l'nechasef, Bezdin goes to the person's property, to his estate. V'zanin u'mefarnesin es ishtoi. So Bezdin goes, the courts provide sustenance and clothing for his wife, uvanov v'noisav, for his sons and his daughters, v'davar achar, and also for something else, which the Gemara later will explain exactly what's a davar achar. But first the Gemara asks on this statement of Rav Chisda that Omle Ravina Ravash Ravina asked Ravashi, Maishna Mahaditanya, there's a brisa that seems to contradict this halacha of Rav Chisda Neima Marukva, because the brisa says, Misha halach l'menin sayam, somebody that goes overseas, and he's away now, and he's not providing for his wife. V'ishtu tevas mezainis, and his wife is demanding a court that she should be supported as every wife deserves to be. So the halacha is best in yerdin l'chasim, so the courts go into his property. V'zanin, and they provide mezainis, meaning sustenance, food, u'mefarnesin, and they provide clothing and garments for his ishtu, for his wife. Avaloi banav v'naisa, but not for his sons and daughters. And the reason is because there actually is no obligation for the father to support his children when he's living. And v'loi davar achar, also that they do not go to his property and provide for this other thing, which we're going to explain momentarily what that is. But one thing we see is that there's a contradiction on two points. Rav Chisda said that when he becomes deranged and he's not here, then we do provide for his sons and daughters and for davar achar. Yet, however, from the Bryce that says that when he's not around because he's overseas, that we do not provide for his sons and daughters and davar achar. So Amalei, so Rav Asher responds to Ravina, says, "V'leshani loch ben yoitz ladash." Don't you differentiate between when he leaves willingly, understanding, knowing what he's doing, liyitz shaloi ladash, to someone that leaves without his knowledge, without his own intention? Meaning, when someone leaves midas, meaning he could have said before he went overseas, "I want that they should support my sons and my daughters and my wife," and he doesn't say that. He goes overseas and he doesn't take care of them. So obviously he's revealed his intention that he doesn't want to support them. Now his wife, who is obligated because of the conditions of the ksuba, so his property becomes meshubed, and there's a lien on it to have to feed his wife. But his sons and daughters know, like the Brisa says, but when he becomes mentally deranged, where he leaves this world shaloi ladas, without intending that, he just, something changes in his mental status, so then we say that generally he would want to feed his sons and his children from his own estate. And therefore then we do provide for them. It's only when he leaves with not knowing that he's not going to be here and he doesn't stipulate to provide them that then we're not allowed to feed them because he doesn't have an obligation to do that. And therefore they're different halachas and doesn't contradict. Now the Gemara asks, "Mai davar achar? What is it that Rav Chisda and the Braisa are both talking about when they mean this other thing?" That is a machlekes. Rav Chisda Amar, he says, "Zeh tachshit." He says that the Braisa is discussing an adornment, meaning that the women would adorn themselves with this type of a fragrance that would be used by the peddlers, where that depends if it's Yoitz Ladas or not. Where the Braisa that says that if it's Yoitz Ladas, that although you have to provide the mezainis and the panosa for his wife, but not for this other thing, not for this tachshit of this besamim. Whereas Rabbi Yosef Amar says tzedakah. It's a reference that if he leaves, goes overseas, that Beis Din cannot go into his property to give charity. Now, the Gemara explains that man damar tachshit, according to the one that says that when he goes overseas, that the davar achar that we don't give, this other thing is this adornment for his wife, that kol shekein, all the more so for sure we would not go ahead on our own and go and take tzedakah, charity from his estate. So although generally there are certain halachas that require a certain amount of tzedakah, but this person that went overseas, we don't go on our own and take charity from his estate. Now, manda mit tzedakah, but the one that says that when the Braisa said that we don't give davar achar is a reference that we don't give charity, this man who went overseas, avotach shed yavin la, but that manda would say that we would give this adornment of this, or aromatic spices that the women would wear, that we do give that to his wife. And the reason is because the Leinichele did tinful, although he didn't stipulate that she should get this. Now, the Mezainis and Panasa, that he has to give because of Tnaik Suba, but we would even still give this Takshid because he doesn't want his wife, while he's away, to become all disgusting and become repulsive. And therefore, even though he didn't say before he left, we give that to his wife. So that would depend on what the interpretation of the Braisa, that when it says that we do not give davar achar, if davar achar means the takshid, for sure we don't give tzedakah, but if it means tzedakah, but however the takshid, that according to that opinion, the Braisa would agree that we do give that to the wife. A related discussion, the Gemara says, Amrav Chibar Av and Amrav Huna. Misha holoch lemedina siyam, someone again that goes overseas. Umesa ishtay, while he's overseas, his wife dies. So the halach is Bez din yerdin l'nechasav. Bez din goes into his property, his estates. And they take the resources to bury her according to the husband's honor, according to his status. Now the Gemara asks, it only goes based on the husband's honor and not on the distinguishing characteristics of the wife. But that's what's called Orcha v'loy orche, meaning there's something called her standards, and then there's, even though it's not his standard. So the question is, if let's say his covet is lower than hers, let's say she was for more nobility, so then are you saying that we only go according to his covet, not according to her covet? But when it's orcha, when it's her standard and not his, everybody agrees that she does not get demoted to his level. And that is even according to the mandama that we mentioned before that holds that she's not oila imoy la'achar misa. She doesn't get elevated to his standard after death. But even that mandama would agree that she's not yeredes. She does not get demoted to his level. So the Gemara says, Ema, what the halacha we were saying was af lefich vaydai. That Rav Chiba Rav was saying that she even gets buried according to his honor. Now, how come Ashman? That obviously he was coming to tell us, according to the man Amar, that oyle imoy ve'ene yeredes imoy, that she gets elevated to his status and doesn't get demoted, v'afila achar misa. That a halacha is even lefich vaydai, even though her standard is lower. But he's saying like that man Amar that holds that even after death, she gets elevated to his level and he would require to do, and we even go ahead and take from his estate when he's overseas, what would be done according to his level of covet. Now, Amr of Masna, he says, Ha'imr, if someone says as he's dying, Im Mesa, if his wife dies, like Tikvaru Minachasav, that they should not bury her from his assets, so Shaiman Lai, so they listen to him. Now, the reason being is because since he's dying while she's still alive, so when he dies, she collects her ksuba. Once she collects a ksuba, he's not obligated to bury her. As the Mishnah says later on, that the ones who inherit her ksuba, they're obligated to bury her. Once she gets her ksuba, he doesn't have to bury her anymore. So if he says, as he's dying, that don't bury my wife from my estate, they don't take from his estate. Now the Gemara asks on that halacha of Masna. Maishno ki ama, why is it specifically only if he says this statement that they shouldn't bury her from an achasim, then they listen to him? The reason being is because the nafli nichsi kamiyasmi, like we explained, because that an achasim are by the assignment, and that is his estate does not become a shubid to her kvur, because it's actually the yershik suba, those who get her ksuba, which that meaning when she dies, her ksuba was then transferred from the obligation of him having to bury her. Now, once she has her ksuba, so the ones who inherit her ksuba are the ones that are obligated to bury her. So the question is, so kilo yomer nami, so then even when he doesn't say this, nixi kamayasmi ramu, so then again, the properties are dependent on the inheritors. So obviously that the inheritors of the father are not obligated to bail out the inheritors of the wife, meaning those who get her ksuba, because that's not their obligation. So why is it only if he says this, even if he doesn't say it, it should not be his side's responsibility to bury the wife who already got her ksuba? So El Rav, the Gemara agrees that that's obviously not the halacha, because he wouldn't be obligated even if he doesn't say this. Rather, it was saying a different halacha. Ha'imer, if someone says as he's dying, that im meis hu, if he himself dies, meaning he sees his end is coming, and he says lo tikberu hu b'nechasav, he doesn't want himself buried from his own estate. Rather, he wants charity cure to take care of him, have other people to have to bury a dead person. On that, we don't listen to him. Because lav koli menu sheyashes banav, it's not within his rights to make his children wealthy, meaning that they shouldn't use as an expense to have to bury him, v'yapalatz alatzibur, and that to throw himself on the community to obligate them in his burial. And therefore, if he has money, we don't listen to him, and we do use his own money to go ahead and bury him. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, again continuing on the theme of the previous Mishnah, which was talking about the transition and the differences between the father's rights and his daughter, and then when she grows up and gets married to her husband. So the Mishnah tells us that lo'olam hi b'rishus ha'av, a woman is always in her father's domain. For example, if let's say she's a bas yisrael, the daughter of a non-kohen who is engaged to a kohen, she would not be able to eat truma. Moreover, the father has all the rights he has in his daughter. As long as she's a naira and a katana, she stays in her father's domain, until she enters, and we continue on Tamid Beis, lishus habal l'nisuin, to her husband's possession for marriage. In other words, that she entered chuppah for the purposes of nisuin, that then it's considered that she was totally given over to her husband's and to her husband's domain. But up until that point, she's b'rishus ha'av. If let's say the father gave over his daughter in marriage to the messengers of the husband, let's say the husband lives very far away, and they sent shluchim, messengers to go ahead and receive the woman, that is already considered that she's already in the domain of the husband, even though there wasn't any chuppah, just that giving over already makes that transition. However, halacha avim shluchi abal, but let's say the father went with the messengers of the husband. He wants to see her through to where she gets there. Or if let's say the father's messengers go together with the husband's messengers, and they're still with them, harehi b'shosav, she's still in her father's domain. Now, masru shluchi av, shluchi abal, but if let's say the father's messengers give her over at some point to the husband's messengers, where because the father had appointed messengers to send her with, and they met the husband's messengers, and then at that point gave them over, harehi b'shosabal. So then, again, that giving over transitions her to her husband's domain, and then she has those halachas. Now, the Gemara wonders, my la'olam, why does it use this term of that she for will always be, as if like it's saying something that we would think not like that? Why do we have to say she's always in her father's domain until she's given over into the chuppah of her husband's domain? So that the Gemara says, the reason why we had to say that extreme term of la'olam is la'fukim mishnah rishayna. We had to exclude from an earlier version of the Mishnah, which is brought in Perek Af al Pi, that not, as the Mishnah teaches in Daf Nanzayinim and Alf. The Mishnah says, and this was brought in the beginning of the Masechta, higia zman, if let's say the time of the wedding has come, meaning which is 12 months for a besula, which is that when the husband, when the her chassan says, okay, let's get ready, let's get married. So then she gets 12 months to prepare for the wedding, which for a widow is 30 days. Let's say the designated time has reached. V'loy nisu, and they didn't get married. Either that, let's say the chassan has held it up for a certain reason, or due to beyond his control, but the wedding has been held up. So the Mishnah, HaRishayna said, the first version of the Mishnah said that oichlis mishaloi v'oichlis b'tshuma. So she already starts eating from his estate. He has to feed her, because according to the plan, she was already supposed to be married, which then he has to feed her. So although now they're not married, but since it's his liability, so she eats from his estate. And v'oichlis b'tshuma, she also eats from tshuma. So therefore, if she's a bas yisrael that's engaged to a kain, once it's already 12 months, although biblically a non-kain cannot eat it, but actually biblically, a woman that's engaged is already kinyan kasbi, could eat. It's only rabbinically that she doesn't once it reaches 12 months. So he already gives her truma. Now, based on that Mishnah, which was an earlier version of the Mishnah, which is quoted in Daf Nanzayinim and Alf, there are times that it's not unilateral in the sense of that even if she's not given over to Rishus Abal, she's already out of Rishus Av, and that is even though she's a Bas Yisrael, she will eat truma. And that's why our Mishnah, which is the later version of the Mishnah, comes to teach that no, she will always be in her father's rishus until she has chuppah with her husband, and therefore even though it's higiyas man, v'leinisis, she still will not be considered b'shus abal, and she will not be oichlis mishloi, and will not be oichlis b'tshuma. Now the Mishnah said that masar av l'shluch abaf, the father gives his daughter over, not even for chuppah yet, but just to the messengers of the husband, harehi b'shus abal, she's already in her husband's domain. So there's a machlokes amiram, how to define what does this mean, that there's no chuppah yet, but she's considered in her husband's domain once she's given over by her father, either to the husband or to the shluchei habal. So amirav, Rav says, misiras lakal, this transition, this giving over is for everything. Meaning the husband, from just now that when the shluchim started taking her, that he inherits her. If she dies, he's metama to her. He gets her earnings. Anything that's applicable between husband and wife applies in this situation where the shluchim have taken her from the father in place of what generally happens with the chuppah. Chutz mitruma, there's one exception. Besides her consumption of truma, that she cannot eat truma yet. Now the reason being is because, as the Gemara says later on, Daf Nanzayinim Beis, that although biblically she really is supposed to eat truma when she gets engaged, she cannot until she gets married that she has chuppah. Here, since there's no chuppah yet, although there is mesir labal, there's the same rabbinic concern of why she doesn't eat still applies, which is called simpan, which essentially what that means is that we're concerned that maybe when the husband finally consummates the relationship and he's intimate with his wife, he's going to see certain blemishes in her that he doesn't like. And that will make the Kedushin and subsequently the Nisuin into a tois, a mistake. And he's going to say that this is a Mekach tois. We were never engaged, we were never married. Now, that's still applicable, even though that there was a Mesirat L'Shluchim, but until he's actually with her, this might be a tais, which will then retroactively have been that she was a non-kohenes eating truma. So because of that concern, even though this mesira accomplishes everything, but not for truma. Bravasi, I mean, he argues, he says, no, afla truma, he says, even for her ability to consume truma starts from the moment that she's with the messengers, although it might be a journey of a month till she gets to her husband, she really can start eating truma. Now, the reason is because Ravasi holds that the reason why the rabbis said that an arusa cannot eat truma is actually for a different reason. It's because we're concerned that if when she's engaged, which in Talmudic times, when she was engaged, she lived by her father's house until she actually had chuppah, if her chassan gives her truma teat because he's a kain, so although biblically she's allowed to, but she might give that good truma wine to her brothers, to her sisters, that's a concern because they're not considered as kahan makahanis. So therefore, we don't allow an arusa. But now when she's already away from her siblings, because she's already on this journey to her husband's house, so even for truma, the mesira l'shluchim is considered in the place of a chuppah, and therefore she could consume truma. Now, Isver Rav Huna l'Ravasi. Rav Huna asked from Ravasi's interpretation that he said that even for truma, v'amrila, and some say that there was chiyah ba'ar rav l'Ravasi, and asked from our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said, lo ilum hi b'sho sa'av. She is always considered in our father's domain, which we just previously explained, that why is it used this term lo'olam, is because of what the Mishnah Rishayna had told us, and we're coming to exclude from the Mishnah Rishayna, that she cannot eat truma until she actually has chuppah. As the Mishnah said, ati shekanes l'chuppah, until she has chuppah. So how can you say that even for truma, that she could go ahead and consume once this mesir l'shluchim? But that can't be. Yes, the Mishnah obviously says when it's Musa, ha'av l'shlich ha'bal, she's b'shus ha'bal, that's for everything else. But not for truma, because that's the whole reason why it says that lo'olam hi b'shus ha'av, ad she'dikanes l'shus ha'bal nisuin, which is until there's chuppah, to tell us that, to exclude from the Mishnah Rishayin, which said that she could have truma. He was saying that you cannot have truma until you have chuppah. So how can you say that she could even do truma even before the chuppah once you have Musa, ha'av l'shlich ha'bal? So regarding that question of Rav Huna, who was Rav's Talmud, and of Rav Chiya Barav, who was his son, so Amalu Rav said to his student and to his sons, who had asked this question on his Bar Plukta, the one who argues on him, meaning Ravasi, he says, Lav aminu luchu, didn't I tell you, leitizlu basar ipcha, that you shouldn't go after things which can be exactly the reverse, meaning I told you that in the Beis HaMedrash, when you're trying to respond to your disputants, don't bring proof from a Mishnah that can be used on either side of the coin, where the one who answers could explain it in a different way. And therefore, he's saying, Yochel l'shnui l'chu, Ravasi could just have easily have answered you, that misirasa zuhi k'nesas l'chupa, that yes, she cannot eat truma even though he giyaz man, even though the time has come, until chupa. But the giving over of the father to the shluch abal is the equivalent of a chupa, as we find the all other areas halacha, and therefore that would be even to truma, and therefore there's no raya from a Mishnah to refute Ravasi. Now continuing on these different opinions regarding what is it that Masra Av L'Shluch HaBal accomplishes, that she's B'Shus HaBal, Ushmul Amar, he says that the Mesira helps L'Yerushasa, to inherit her. In other words, if let's say this long journey that the woman he's engaged to is taking to with his Shluchim to come to where he lives, if she dies on the way, so then this husband, the chassan, inherits the nadin, the dowry which is written into the ksuba that the father had given his daughter to bring into the marriage. Now, although the Gemara later on says on Dafna Gilam at Aleph that when a wife that's a narusa, that's only engaged, dies, that he does not inherit her, here the chiddush that Shmuel is saying is that since the father already gave her over the shluchi habal, so then the father already concedes it to the husband's domain, because of the closeness of the marriage, which already starts this moment he gives over his daughter to these messengers. Now, however, that Shmuel says is only for the chassan to inherit her. But regarding truma, or let's say the ability of the chassan to be made for her nadarm without a partnership with her father, or for her lost objects, where that's only because of Ava, because of if he doesn't get it, then he's not going to give her different things that he would normally give her. Now, those things don't apply yet until she's actually comes to the chuppah. So therefore, for that, Mesira does not help. It only helps for his ability to inherit her because the father has already given that over. He already was meichel at the moment she goes up with the shluch habal. For everything else, that only applies, according to Shmuel, once there's actually chuppah. where they actually have a marriage relationship, where then all the different things would apply, her earnings and all these different things, and therefore that's when she enters into his domain. Rish Lakish Amar, he gives a different interpretation. He says it's luksubasa, that this that it, our Mishnah says that just giving over from the father to the shluch abal helps, it's regarding her ksuba. Now the Gemara is going to inquire exactly ksubasa mahi. What does Rish Lakish mean when he says that Masar av l'shluch abal helps that she's b'shus abal regarding the ksuba? If it means the imesa yaris law, that meaning that if she dies, then the husband inherits her. Now the reason why that would be called a ksuba is because the nadin, the dowry that the wife is bringing into the marriage, was established by the father and it's written into the ksuba. So that's what we're saying, that regarding her ksuba, she's b'shus abal if she dies now, in the time of when she's being in this transition of shluch abal, but hain de shmul, that's exactly what Shmuel said. So Ravina says that it's leimer to say ksubasa, it's talking about a future ksuba. That ksubasa me'acher man, it's coming to tell us that her, if she gets married to someone else, her ksuba will only be that of a mana, meaning like the equivalent of how much an almana gets from nisuin. Now, because the chama only established a mana for an almana, so it's saying that if, let's say, she never ends up consummating this relationship, it ends now only after that she was given over to Shluch Abal, even so, she's considered already an almana from Nisuin, even though there wasn't Chuppah. That's what Rish Lakish is saying, Luxubasa, meaning for a future Ksuba, there's a relevance of saying that Masa of the Shluch Abal is as if she already was Bishus Abal. Oh, once you're Bishus Abal, and then you get widowed, so now you're only going to have a mana, a Ksuba. That's the relevance of saying that it's already Bishus Abal. Rabbi Yechon, Rabbi Chanina, Damer Tavai, they both say, Misirios Lakal, her giving over the Shluch Abal is considered Bishus Abal for everything. Afla Truma, even for Truma, like Rav Asi had said. Now, Meisvi, the Gemara asks from the following Braisa on all the interpretations besides that of Shmuel. The Braisa says, Halacha Av Mishluch Abal, similar to the case of our Mishnah, that if the father goes with the husband's messengers, or let's say the father doesn't go, but his own messengers go with the husband's messengers. So again, as we said, explained before, so it's not a total mesira, it's not totally given over yet. He still has some hold on her. So that's not yet b'shus abal. Or if, let's say, there was a courtyard on the way going from her house to her husband's house. The nichnasa imoi, and then as she's going with her soon-to-be husband, who she's engaged to, she goes with him, and she enters into the house in this courtyard, lulling to go to sleep at night, like a regular time when the person just makes the night at nighttime, but not for purposes of nisu and to consummate the relationship. So on that, the Braisa says that afa pishesh ksubasa, so even if her ksuba, meaning the movable items that her father designated for her dowry, which is put into the ksuba, even if it's already beveis baila, they already got the movers. They already took all the stuff that she's bringing into the marriage, and it's already in her husband's house. If Mesef, she dies on their way to his house, avia yarsha, her father inherits her, not her husband. And all those stuff that's in this house goes back to her father. The reason being of all these three cases is because she's still in her father's domain. She never left. When the father is going along, she's still with the father. When the father's shluchim is going along, she's still with the father. And even if she's still on the way, and even if they made the night, but if it wasn't for nisuin purposes, so therefore, although it's masar av l'shluche, although it's the husband is walking with the wife, she's still in her father's domain. However, masar av l'shluche abal, if the father already gave it over to the husband's messengers, or if the father's messengers gave her over to the husband's messengers, or if, let's say, he had a courtyard on the way, meaning he owned a piece of property on the way to where his regular home is, and he entered with her into that to sleep there at night for the purposes of nisuin. So even if her, let's say, what she's bringing in the nad and dowry is still in her father's house, but if Mesef, she dies, so then her husband inherits her. Now that's the classic case of Masar Av L'Shluchei Abal, where she's already B'Shus Abal. Now, Bamedu Amrum, the Braisa says, when did we say this, that the father's giving over to the shluchim is considered nisuin? That's only lirushasa. That's only for this variable, only for this point, that for that we will consider it as nisuin, that the husband will inherit her. Avla truma, but for the woman's ability to eat truma, enisha achilas b'truma asher tekanes l'chuppah. A woman cannot eat truma until she enters into chuppah. So the Gemara says, Tiyufta de kulu, this refutes every interpretation on those who argue on Shmuel, who Shmuel is the only one that said like this Brisa that says is only l'rishasa. Tiyufta, this refutes every different interpretation. It can't be for truma, as the Brisa clearly says. And either is it for her future ksuba. It's not like any of the other interpretations, as we see that the Mesiris ha'avla shlucha ba'al is only l'rishasa. Now, but once we introduce that Brisa, the Gemara has a difficulty in the Brisa itself. The Gemara says, Hagufa Kasha, the Brisa seems to be contradictory in what it's insinuating. And that is, Amrit Nechnesa Yimoy Lolin, you said that if she enters with her chosin, when she's still Bershus Ha'av, on the road she goes and spends the night, that she's still going to be in her father's domain, sounds like time of the Lolin. The reason it sounds like is because they only went to spend the night. And that's what they were going for. Hastama, but if they just went in and spent the night without attributing what the purpose of that is, then you would say it was l'shem nisuin, that it would be for nisuin purposes, and that this would be the equivalent of, like, as if they're having a chuppah, which chuppah is really a replica of what it means to take her into his domain. Now that sounds like even if they didn't have bia, that would be considered nisuin. However, Emes Seifa, look at the Seifa, where the inference is the opposite. The Sefer says, "Nichnasei mo l'shem nisuin." If on their way from the father's house to his house, they went into a chatzar and they spent the night for the purpose of nisuin, so then the Braisa said, "Then she's nichnasei mo l'shosabal." Hastama lolin, but the understanding is, but if they didn't designate what the purpose is, that it would be only considered that they're just spending the night, and that she would be b'shosav. So the question basically is, the inferences are contradictory about what is the halacha if they just spend the night without saying if it was lalin or it was l'nisuin. The inferences from the Rishon and Sefer contradict each other. So Amar Rashi answers, he says, stama katani. He says that this, that it's said in the Rishon, let's say that if nichnasei moy lalin, that they're going in just to spend the night, it's not that they designated that we're going in to spend the night and not for nisuin purposes. And this, that the Sefer said that they're going for nisuin purposes, it's not that she said, okay, we're going in for nisuin purposes. Rather, both the Reish and the Sefer are talking about that they went in just plain without saying what the purpose is. Now, it's the Tana that was saying, stam chatzar dida, that where the chatzar was her own courtyard. Then stam, if they don't attribute what the purpose of it is, then it's not for nisuin purposes, and rather it's only lalin, and it's only to spend the night, because it's her courtyard, not his. So that would make sense, stama, that we assume that it's only to spend the night, and therefore she's still b'shosav. However, stam chatzu didei, however, the case of the Seifa, which was talking about where the courtyard was his, then generally when they enter into his home, in that courtyard, on the way to his regular house, is l'nisuin. That's for nisuin purposes, and therefore that would transition her from Rishos Av to Rishos Abba. Now, continuing on this theme, the Gemara brings Tanu, we learned in the Braisa, Masra Av l'shluchei Abal v'zinsa, if the father gives over his daughter to the messengers of the husband, and then she's mezana, zarezu b'chenik, so she gets executed with strangulation like a regular married woman, and not like skila, being stoned, like an arusa, like a woman that's engaged. Because as we explained before in our Mishnah and the Braisa, that just by giving her over l'shluch abal, she's really considered b'shus abal, hence that's the equivalent of k'nis l'chupo, so she's like a married woman and not like an arusa, an engaged woman, and therefore she gets chenek, not skila. So the Gemara's Menonim, where do we know this halacha from? So Amar Ami Bar Chama, he says, Amakra, the Pasuk says in Devarim, and this is the Pasuk of the parasha of Naim Arasa, which generally gets skila. So it says in the Pasuk, Vamesa, and she will die, ki asa nevala b'Yisrael, because she has done this despicable thing in the Jewish people, which is lizmai spesavia, to act with infidelity, to be mezana in her father's household, meaning when she's still engaged, which generally, when she was engaged, she was by her father's household. So Prat, that's what Rabbi says, that excludes l'masra av l'shluch abal, when the father has already given her over to the messenger of the husband, which she's not in Besavia anymore. She already left her father's household. So though she didn't have chuppah yet, didn't enter into her husband's household, but since she's already out of the father's house, so she's no more in the parasha of Naim Arasa v'skila, rather she gets chenek. Now that the Gemara asked, v'eima prat, maybe we should exclude only shenichnas l'chuppah v'lein nivela. maybe we shouldn't make such a large exclusion for the halacha of Naima Rasa from Skila. Maybe it's only excluding if she already had chuppah, she just didn't have bia yet. In other words, because it would make sense like the Gemara is asking, like the Gemara's questioner, because the Torah says who gets skila? A naira besula, a besula that's a naira that's engaged. Now, this woman is still a besula, but regarding the case of where she didn't even come to chuppah yet, where it's only masa av l'shluch habal, maybe we shouldn't exclude it from the pasuk. Maybe that would still be considered beis avia. How do you know to exclude so far from Naima Rasa? Maybe it's only if she had chuppah and she didn't have bia yet. So that we're saying, okay, that's already beis habal, not beis haaf, even though they didn't consummate the relationship yet. That is chenik not skila. But if it's only masa av l'shluch habal, who said that's not called beis habal, beis avia? Maybe that's still considered beis avia until she enters into the actual beis habal. So that Amarava, he says that Amali Ami told me that chuppah, regarding what you're suggesting of when she already had chuppah without bia, that behed yiksiva, that explicitly we learned that that's not going to be skila, and therefore this, that the drush of beis avia that it's excluding, must be excluding the masar av l'shluch habal. Because the pasuk there says, a few two pasukim later, says, ki yia nara besula may rasal ish, that if it's going to be a nara, who is a besula, that's engaged to a man. Now, there's three different terms which are exclusionary. First of all, she has to be a naira, and v'le begeres, not a begeres, meaning she has to be under the age of 12 and a half. When she's over 12 and a half, she's not in the category of naima rasa. She has to be besula, a virgin, v'le ba'ula, not someone that already had bia. And v'le rasa, she has to be only engaged, v'le nesua, not married. Now, my nesua, what does the pasig mean in the drasha when it's saying that she has to be an arusa, but not married? If it means what normally marriage means, that she already entered into chuppah and consummated relationship by having bia, but that's already excluded from the other terminology of that she has to be a basula and not a ba'ula, which is someone that consummated relationship. Rather, so what is the term of arusa, what's excluding nesua, saying? It's excluding from someone that at least had chuppah but didn't have bia. And therefore, that we already know that someone that had chuppah and didn't have bia is not going to be considered a naima rasa. So therefore, that's already excluded. So it must be when the other miut of beis avia, what that's excluding, must be being memayed, even an earlier stage of masr av, l'shluch habal, that as we said, that she's not going to get skila anymore, but rather she's going to get chenek.